Yeah. Do you need the chair?
All right. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Creation, is it? Creation, Chapter 6, Conversation between Narada, Nanda, Narada, and Vyasadeva. What's that the actual title?
What number is it?
Let's see.
What number is it?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm so dependent on reading lips, these masks of handicap me. Yeah. There it is. I can see it, but there's no number visible.
19. Yes.
Text.
19.
It says, Abhipata. And then it looks like it's different on the screen.
19.
Text 19. It's a pivotal verse. And I'm very fortunate that Krishna has arranged for this verse. But, unfortunately, if I may proceed the class with this, unfortunately, it's very difficult for me to watch a screen without the words underneath. I watch Prabhupada's lectures with subtitles. And that's the best I can do. Otherwise, reading most of the time. So for me to view the class, I normally make every effort to attend the class and sit close so I can watch what the person is saying. And I depend on that. So I heard that if there's comments, questions, corrections, criticisms, additions, that people respond on the telephone, or it comes in on some device, and then the person would convey the question to me, that would be very difficult. So I'll make a bargain with the cyberspace devotees. And this is my text number, And if you really have a long question, you can email me, but you should text that I have a question that's coming. The text number is 336-327-1998. That's my text number. And you can, you know, text me anytime if you have some issue with what I'm saying. But I will check at the time of questions and answers. I'll look at my phone directly, and I read the question out as you text me. That will make that a little more streamlined. Or if someone submits a question to you, if you could forward it to me, and I would thank you very much. Sorry for the complexity. Recently, my reading has taken me into a kind of an interesting subject matter of research, and I research both as terminology. So the terminology that came to me decades ago was the term steady. It's a synonym for this whole kutasha. Kutasha means the steady. In fact, one devotee who ended up preaching in France, Prabhupada gave him the name kutasha das. So one with the soul, unchanged, steady, very steady. This is it. So I thought, yes, well, that's missing in my behavior. So I apply myself to that. And in my recent studies, I've been looking at the word, how many times in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada, which is a lot for certain things. For example, only once Krishna presents self-discipline. It's interesting. Only once. It's chapter 5, text 26. For those of you who are, you know, research experts, you can look at it. It's at once. But this is a qualification. Before becoming someone's disciple, you should exercise self-discipline. Some form of restraint. Restraint, self-restraint, self-discipline. But the word that's flashing before me when I'm reading now is the simplicity. Straightforward in one's dealings. That's how Prabhupada defines it in one way. And another way, he assigns all devotees should live simply. Very simply. So, unfortunately, we're living in, at this particular day in history, life is terribly complex. In order to hear someone, you have to have $1,000 machine, and in order to communicate with people, so much technology is behind it. I have numerous devotee friends that work in the business of just holding up the artificiality of intercommunication. It's crashing all the time. And so they're very busy all the time. 24-hour service. Anytime some glitch happens, they're terribly busy. And they work at home, but they have to go to the office too. And it's good occupational service. The devotees are using it, and everyone's communicating it. But the essence of all communication is, in fact, conveying the capacity to communicate with Krishna. The capacity, just how we interact with Krishna. So, although I am now classed as a, what's the word they use? Profoundly deaf. Still, when I'm walking the streets and I interact with people and they have masks on, and I don't even put my hearing aid on, but still, I can somehow catch what they're trying to say, and they can feel my support. Yeah? And this is what I'm noticing. I've moved into Gainesville recently. It's quite interesting. Every day feels like a Sunday. It's real quiet. And people are walking. They're like, it's a big adventure for them. Most people are on bicycle and they're jogging, and then people who are working, essential workers. But then there's people who are just strolling. Maybe some of them first time they come out. And then, like, I'm not equipped. How can I deal with it? So I pick flowers for the deities that are in the home that I'm staying at. And then yesterday there was an interaction with someone, and they were walking by, and I knew they would walk by again. So I quickly took one of the flowers and offered it to Krishna in my mind, and then gave it to them. But I didn't have to sign up. But somehow, some connection. Okay, now, bearing down chapter 6, conversation between Narada and Vyasa, text 19, on the board, on the screen. Dikrishishtat aham bhuya.
Dikrishishtat aham bhuya.
Pranidaya manovidhi.
Pranidaya manovidhi.
Diksha manovidhi napaksha.
Diksha manovidhi napaksha.
Avit dipta ivatura.
Avit dipta ivatura.
Dikshasad amuya.
Dikshasad amuya.
Anidaya manavidi.
Anidaya manavidi.
Dikshamanavi napasham.
Dikshamanavi napasham.
Vikrapit vikrapta. Ivatura. There's always one man that throws it, yeah? Dikshasad ambuya.
Dikshasad ambuya.
Anidaya manohidi.
Anidaya manohidi.
Diksha manopi napaksha.
Diksha manopi napaksha.
Ivatura.
If
you do so, okay. Dikshasad amruya. Nidaya manavidhi. Dikshamanopi napasyam. Anyone else? I'm sure there are a lot of other people at home trying. Okay, we'll go to the word for words. The transliteration, here we go. Yudhikshuhu.
Desiring to see.
That.
That.
Aham.
I.
Ura. Again. Pranidaya.
Pranidaya.
Having concentrated the mind.
Mana.
Mind.
Vidhi,
upon the heart.
Vikshamanaha,
waiting to see.
Api,
in spite of. Na,
never.
Apasyam, saw him. Avichitta,
avichitta,
avichitta. Without being satisfied. Ida,
like.
Aturaha,
agreed.
Agreed. Thank you very much. Translation by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I desire to see again that transcendental form of the Lord. But despite my attempts to concentrate upon the heart with eagerness, to view the form again, I could not see him anymore, and thus, dissatisfied, I was very much aggrieved. Please repeat. I desired to see again, that transcendental form
of the Lord,
but despite my attempts, to concentrate upon
the heart with eagerness
to view the form again, I could not see him anymore, and thus,
dissatisfied,
I was very much aggrieved. And we may note how much an investment of emotion is involved. Eagerness, a grief, and dissatisfaction. Each one of them manifests in multiple forms of emotion, an internal feeling, you could say. Okay, purport by His Divine Grace is the Dr. Panantasamy, Srila Prabhupada. There is no mechanical process to see the form of the Lord. It completely depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. We cannot demand the Lord to be present before our vision, just as we cannot demand the sun to rise whenever we like. The sun rises out of its own accord, so also the Lord is pleased to present out of His causeless mercy. I'm sorry, pleased to present out of His causeless mercy. Be present. Oh, there it is. The sun rises out of its own accord, and also the Lord is pleased to be present out of His causeless mercy. One should simply await the opportune moment and go on discharging his prescribed duty in devotional service of the Lord. Interesting. Narada Muni thought that the Lord could be seen again by the same mechanical process which was successful in the first attempt. But in spite of his utmost endeavor, he could not make the second attempt successful. The Lord is completely independent of all obligations. He can simply be bound up by the tie of unalloyed devotion. Nor is he visible or perceivable by our limited senses. When he pleases, being satisfied with the sincere attempt of devotional service, depending completely on the mercy of the Lord, then he may be sent out of his own accord. Let me read that again. When he pleases, being satisfied with the sincere attempt of devotional service, depending completely on the mercy of the Lord, then he may be seen out of his own accord. So everything happens out of Krishna's will. And in our faith, the term is revealed. So revelation. Krishna reveals himself to the sincere practitioner, but doesn't reveal himself visibly. In this meditation, Narada Muni has gone through the mechanics, Prabhupada's using this term. Of course, a well-known story from some Purana, but it's injected into the Nectar of Devotion, where there was a brahmana, and he was very poor, but he heard that one could perform their devotional service within the mind, within the heart. And so Prabhupada elucidates there in the Nectar of Devotion that this brahmana used common knowledge of pranayama to induce deep meditation. And in that mechanical process, he was engaged in devotional service, utilizing silver and gold utensils, collecting water directly from the sacred rivers, and so forth and so on. So he went all the way through it, and then was engaging his mind and heart in service. And Krishna revealed himself in a very odd way. He was preparing an offering, and the offering was to be presented before the Lord in his meditation in a cool state, some kheer or sweet rice. So he tested it to see if it was cool enough to offer. And when he tested it in his meditation, he burned his finger, because he was testing it by touching, in his meditation. And when he opened his eyes, he saw that his finger was actually burned. So this is, you could call it, the mundane, as you use the term, self-hypnosis. In hypnosis, one can actually manifest injury, like a burn. Right? If the mind is a manifest strong intention, then it's possible. But the revelation isn't the burn. The revelation is the exchange in an affectionate relationship with Krishna. Krishna isn't burning him. Is it showing him that his meditation is being accepted, that all of the devotional service that was engaged in the form of a meditation. But the ultimate aspect of the meditation is when it broke. It became a part of reality. Not that the meditation was real. And simultaneously, in Vaikuntha, Krishna snickered and Mother Lakshmi, Deva, his constant companion, was inquisitive. Why is it that you're smiling? And in order to answer her question, he simply sent the Vishnu Dutas to collect this Brahman. And in the presence, in the court of Vaikuntha, the whole explanation was given. In other words, Narayan, or Vishnu, Krishna, explained this whole procedure, that this Brahmana was so poor, but he engaged in service to me. And now he's come back like that. He was called for. So the meditation for any devotee is whatever service. Here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, engage in prescribed duties in devotional service to the Lord. Whatever you're doing, may it become devotional service to the Lord. Then it's meditation, and through the service, I don't know, so many people, my personal experience, I spend many, many, many long hours mostly cleaning in a kitchen. Like cooking is there for Krishna's pleasure, and cleaning for the next devotee. And during that time, so many realizations come. Krishna is revealing how to do everything. How to clean, how to cook, how to please the devotee. And devotees sometimes, other devotees, administrative devotees, they may find fault because I spend so much time cleaning and so little time cooking. And why I take so little time cooking is that I think that the efficiency of the service and the thoroughness of the act. And now, of course, the standard of hygiene has been pushed up. But this is Krishna's desire, is the highest possible hygienic conditions. Not using chemicals, but just using brahminical culture. But that same application in choosing ingredients and preparing everything. But let's shift it to someone's ordinary occupational activity. Someone who's employed. And they're employed to, you could say they're employed by circumstance. You could say they're employed because of fate, that they're destined to do this. But it's really the provision of Krishna. Krishna supplies someone with an interest. They pursue it in education. They become capable of doing it. They're trained. And then they go out in the world and look for a job and they can't find it. And then they end up doing something else. Whenever your natural inclination, in other words, your prescribed duty is according to your psychophysical nature. So what you end up doing, for example, I was trained in art and literature and theater, but I ended up teaching because the purpose of art and literature is teaching, is to convey a message to others. But when I looked for a job, there wasn't any really job. There wasn't anything. My natural inclination led me. So fate, providence, Krishna's hand, led me to being employed by various educational institutions. And I ended up enjoying that more than anything because when I was an artist or writing or in advertising agencies, it wasn't to help other people. It was to exploit. It was to, you know, egotistically express my talent. But then I started to recognize, even in that simple process, that the talent is God-given. And then what is the purpose of receiving a gift from someone if you don't share it with others? So when it came to looking for how I can maintain my family and I look for service in the real world, then it came by fate to be teaching. Be teaching. So my interest shifted into conveying a simple message to other people and seeing the benefit of them. So I'm going to teach art, teach writing, teach whatever, teach Gurukul, and teach the family. Gurukul actually means Kula means family. The family of the Guru. And the family that we have, the extended family, now it's socially being tested. So the family is meant to be humanity at large. And that every interaction with every person in your employment or just on the grounds or out on the street, car to car, in the shop, anywhere, it's an opportunity for you to present your Krishna consciousness. And your Krishna consciousness is your realization or what Krishna reveals of himself to you, the soul and the super soul, the Lord in the heart. So Krishna can convey, like, for example, when you listen to morning walk conversation, or you read them, I have to read them now. So Prabhupada's walking, and there's the clicking of his cane on the whatever surface they're walking on. He's speaking with his disciples, and then some pedestrian is coming from the other direction. And Prabhupada very warmly says good morning to the other person. Morning walk. Morning. Good morning. Within those two words, good morning, there is Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada realizes there's nothing good without Krishna. Krishna is revealed. There's nothing good without Krishna. Krishna is all good. And morning, there's no morning, as mentioned here. The sun rises of its own accord. We cannot beckon the sun to rise, and we cannot ask Krishna to appear, but we don't have to ask Krishna to appear. Krishna is within the heart. It's a question of pleasing him, and then he reveals himself. It's an experiential. This term in Sanskrit, drishta, it means to see. But it also, drishtam, or drishtam, the seer, one who sees, but it's also used, Prabhupada uses it as experience. So experience means to see. Or we also, in English, we use this word when someone asks, do you understand what I'm saying? And you respond, yes, I see. I see. It's understanding. I've experienced what you see. And I'm kind of rolling off without the preliminary prayers. Om for fun and review, I've taken up the habit of reading all the small books. I read them all. They're so wonderful. I read them over and over again. They're so wonderful because I distribute them, but mostly I have literature that relates to a different topic and I'm going to offer it to someone, I read it before I offer it to them, so they know what the content is. So these wonderful little books, this one is called Krishna Consciousness, the Topmost Yoga System. Is it on screen? Yeah, this one's been on my dashboard for so long that the cover's bleached out. But I sit and read these books, and then I keep them on my dashboard so that if I meet someone, I grab it, give it to them. So it's so fun to read Prabhupada's elementary method of preaching. He's preaching to the devotees. He's preaching to the public. You know, these are transcriptions of lectures. So Prabhupada says at one point that the scientists, for example, we do not know the varieties even on this planet. If you go to the sea, to the sky, your perception is limited. Our knowledge is therefore always imperfect. On that we must agree. If we foolishly think that we have acquired all forms of knowledge and we have advanced in science, this is another foolishness. It is not possible. how much we can know. It's up to Krishna. Even what we know is limited to what Krishna allows us to know. Many people have their interest areas. Even in Krishna consciousness, many enthusiastic devotees that know everything about conducting Krishna, and other people who are inclined towards scripture. And then horticulturists, they know so much about plants. You know, they can, the science of fertilization. But how much can we know about anything? So then Prabhupada shifts gears, and he says, and when it is not possible to understand even the material things which we daily see with our eyes, what can we say of the spiritual world and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He is the supreme spiritual form. You know, this is Narada Muni lost the vision of the form. So here, he is the supreme spiritual form, and it is not possible to understand him by our limited senses. So our limited senses are the knowledge-acquiring senses. You can't feel them. You can't walk with them, right? And the knowledge-acquiring senses and the working senses. You see? No, not possible. Material? No, he's not material. You can't hear? No, because it's material. But transcendental knowledge, Prabhupada explains here, is that why, then, are we bothering so much for Krishna consciousness? It's such a nice rhetorical question. You pose the question, why are we even bothering for Krishna consciousness? I often ask myself. But here Prabhupada is challenging the reader, or the audience at the time of the speaking, if it is not possible, why are we bothering so much for Krishna consciousness? If these imperfect senses cannot realize Krishna as he is? The answer is, Prabhupada pretend this, the answer is that if you become submissive, if you develop the spiritual attitude of following Krishna, and you are a servant, or a friend, as a parent, or as a lover, if you begin to give service to Krishna, then you can begin to know him. In other words, he reciprocates in the simplest possible terms, and he reveals himself to the sincere practitioner. This is Krishna consciousness. It's not that you learn Krishna consciousness, but you experience Krishna consciousness. And the experience comes from the eternal, transcendental relationship we have with this out-of-reach person. He's out of reach! I mean, no matter how hard we reach, you know, during kirtan, we're reaching, trying to touch his feet, or trying to touch the sky, or trying to leap into heaven. He's beyond that. Why? Because we, like little Harani Kashyapas, are not looking within the heart. We're searching for him everywhere else, but he's right there next to us. And when the sun arises, Prabhupada uses this wonderful example that when the sun arises, there's several examples of what the sun, so many examples of what the sun. There's the one in the Padyavali, you know this one? There's a, when the moon is invisible, withered to nil, and the sun is long gone from the sky, then an ocean of darkness envelops this world. With a timorous fear, all may die. But that thick pall of gloom is at once swept away when the first signs of sunrise appear, and the dawning of day gives assurance to all that in truth there is nothing to fear. And in a similar way, when illusion holds sway and the souls have forgotten their Lord, then the darkness of ignorance covers their hearts. Sins and sufferings are the reward. But as soon as one chants Krishna's name, even once, in a manner that doesn't offend, then the ignorance flees like the darkness at dawn, and the sins and the sufferings end. So there's nothing to fear, for the Son of the Name has appeared, for this power is divine. In your heart, may that Son, benedictive for all, become fixed and eternally shine. So when the sun arises, everything is one in the darkness. This is another example, probably, just very, very charming parallel to the Mayavadi concept that it's all one. Yeah, in darkness, you can't discriminate between anything. It's all dark, it's all black. So it's all one, it's all dark. But when the sun arises, then you see so many variety of manifestations, and one sees them. So when the sun rises, you see everything, and you actually can see, perceive yourself. So when the sun of the soul of the soul, the heart, so the soul in the heart, as accompaniment, you know, like two little birds sitting in a tree, one is Krishna, one is me, I am always in distress, trying to find happiness. Krishna is waiting day by day for me to turn and look his way. So when the super soul vanquishes the darkness of ignorance, then we see Krishna and we see ourselves. Kind of things. Self-realization. The goal of life, Prabhupada defines, the goal of life is self-realization. And there is no self-realization if you're in the dark. When one is enlightened, and that enlightenment comes from the essential verses in chapter 10, that I dwelling in the heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance. And what is this knowledge? Is it book knowledge? Is it memorization of certain passages? That helps. Is it Krishna revealing himself? In other words, one's personal exchange with Krishna. What is he awakening us to do? And of course, the ultimate service, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is taking one's realizations out into the dark world, like a torch, and providing some light to people living in the dark. And it starts just by their attraction to the light. Just their minute realization that they're living in the dark. That they have this minute independence. And they, with that minute independence, they can minutely realize. But if we flash a big Krishna consciousness on them, then they take it as intimidating. Yeah? But just your own light, a word of friendly, kind, understanding, or sometimes not even a word, just a smile, and receptivity, that you are there for the other person. You're just there. And let the other person explain how much darkness they're in and what they're actually searching for. Now, I'll give you some kind of unusual example. A friend of mine met someone, and in the course of meeting them, they conveyed Krishna consciousness in the form of a book. And this is an old school, for example, there's always a pen somewhere. With the book, there's always a pen. When we first met, I was just doing street sankirtan all the time. And then part of it was that you'd inscribe the book. If you had a personal connection with the person, it wasn't just, here's a book, give a donation. Then the person was really interested, besides giving the address or pointing out that we have programs and centers all over the world, that you'd actually inscribe the book. And nowadays, people leave their telephone number because it's so much handy. And not that you have to go home and figure out where the telephone book is and look up someone. But people are in the community. So they put their telephone number in the book. And then one recent evening, I guess pretty recent, because people are so lonely and so isolated because of the present condition of humanity. So this person called the person who received the book, called the person who distributed the book, and invited them over for illicit sex. Right? So that, and it happened to be in a car this day. So the person, of course, was fasting. And as the person, as this young person was explaining to me that he never felt so much like Haridas Thakur in his life. Into, you know, in the dark of night, and Mayadevi rings you up and says, well, you know, if you're not busy, you know, come on over. And they said, Krishna in the heart purifies the mind. And this is the stages of meditation. It's like the indwelling, so in the heart, the meditation, the mind is rested by mechanical means and is able to focus on the Lord in the heart. And there you see Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj also, same thing. Deep meditation, and then it went blind. And then standing before him with Garuda is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's dumbfounded. Of course, 5-6-year-old boy, you know, he wasn't so much equipped to speak, but he spoke quite vigorously with Narada Muni. And all this time, and before him is the Supreme Lord touches him with his conch shell, touches Dhruva Maharaj's forehead with the conch shell, and then he speaks to it. So Krishna can alert you, just like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Conch shells are blowing, and it shatters the hearts of the demons, and enlivens the devotees. Enlivens the devotees. Simultaneously, shattering the hearts of the avaricious, and enlivening the innocent, meek, and humble warriors. Meek and humble warriors. It's so strange, they're equipped with this. So Krishna alerted the devotee. And the devotee began to expand. And this is a very nice invitation. Very nice invitation. I appreciate it very much. But there may be more to your emotional needs than the physical exchange. There's more. That the depth of loneliness that isn't going to be pacified or satisfied here in Narada Muni, although he's very advanced in his meditation. After the meditation breaks, he feels dissatisfaction and he's aggrieved. He's grieving for having lost the Lord. And then it expands more. Of course, Krishna speaks to you, the voice, and explains to him, this eagerness that you're experiencing, this aggrievement of the separation between us, is going to carry you through the remainder of your life and take you into a new preaching field in a new body. And we don't even know his name. The story, he doesn't even mention his name. He doesn't mention eating or sleeping and the details. Just, he's walking, long, 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 walking through so many places, so many mines and industries and villages and towns and so dark, deep forests and so much the danger from animals. But no, that's not, doesn't mention where he slept or what he ate. He is Krishna carrying through. Krishna's leading the devotee. And then he rests in meditation, and what happens? It's a sort of like a flash of Vrindavan experience. Born to Vrindavan, I interact with Krishna for so many years, and then Krishna just leaves. He leaves. He leaves, and then leaves everyone crying forever. And people are acting like mad. They're mad. They're lost. They're in a form of delusion, transcendental delusion, living within their mind, not able to separate themselves from Krishna at any moment. Radharani never sleeps because her eyes are constantly tearing up. Huh? So this is deep realization. Krishna reciprocating in his absence, so-called absence. He's never absent for the devotee. And then the conversation between the two people was a preaching program. Preaching program. Kadasi evening preaching program on the phone, you know, a safe distance away, and conveying realizations. Yes, we can, yeah, sure, we can be satisfied by rubbing two hands to relieve an itch. Yeah, you can be satisfied for a moment. But then what is your real, what is promoting the sense of dissatisfaction is that lack of chastity with the Supreme Lord. That you lost your eternal relationship with the person who can completely satisfy you on all levels. In other words, experience fullness. Experience fullness. Others plot, it's a little exaggerated, but others plan because of the first devotees They distributed a book in exchange for gasoline. Their gasoline tank was empty, and they pulled in, and they distributed, the person filled up the tank. The person in those days, probably gasoline cost 12 cents a gallon. Right? But, you know, they pulled in, and they had a book, and then the person filled up the tank, and then they said, well, we're monks, and we distributed a book. And then he took the book, and, yeah, good. Right? This book is valuable, and more valuable than gasoline. And they filled the tank, and there was landmark book distribution, right? So I took this concept that people come, they want something. They check, you know, they pull into a gasoline stand or a service station. Service station, devotees. Devotees have the biggest service station. One morning in Mayapur, at the greeting time, I looked through the crowd. It was very crowded. And I saw, you know, like, when I was a kid, the man would come and clean the windshield and fill the tank in the service station. It was called a service station. Now it's a gasoline stand, a convenience center, a place where you buy chips and fill up with fuel and you can slide your card. No interaction. No person is there, except in New Jersey. They still have a law or something that has to be an attendant. I looked through the crowd of men over their heads to see the deities, and I saw a room full of service station attendants. That could easily have been this very friendly man who immaculately cleans your windshield. So this is, in a way, our position. Humble servant of the cars of others. In order to clean the windshield of the population, we take the cleansing agent of Krishna consciousness, our own personal realization, and the realizations of His divine grace through the Prabhupada, and prepare to carry that through. And what is the purpose? So that the common people can not be aggrieved and realize satisfaction. Now let's see, I'm going to check my phone to see if there's anyone busily thumbing the screen. I hope it works in there. Got one? Okay, I guess we could sort of make it more of a classic presentation and go back through the verse one more time. I always agree with that, so we know what we're actually talking about. And then I'll read a little bit more from later in the chapter. I'm going to invite you all to make your comments and questions. Okay, so this is the verse in the English translation is, I desire to see again the transcendental form of the Lord, but despite my attempts to concentrate upon the heart with eagerness to view the form again, I could not see him anymore, and thus dissatisfied, I was very much aggrieved. It's not that you're always happy in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes Krishna makes it so that you feel dissatisfied and aggrieved. But he does that by circumstance. There's a purpose behind it. There's always some practical... Krishna doesn't suggest anything impractical. It's always practical. That your eagerness to realize him increases. And even when you're aggrieved, what are you aggrieved about? Is your separation from Krishna. Right? And when we interact with other devotees, sometimes it makes you feel needy, right? What is it? We should come in deeper in touch with what that is. And then we have to restrain ourselves under all circumstances. So if in like 2 weeks, probably, maybe 2 weeks, there'll be this verse, it's text 35 of the same chapter. You can look ahead if you like. And it is true that by practicing restraint of the senses, by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. For this satisfaction is derived from devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Through practical service, one expresses love. And that love, if it's genuinely felt, in other words, experienced, when it's genuinely experienced, that love, that is what equates to the term unalloyed. It's not mixed with other things. When a person is even romantically in love, they're blinded to everything else. Everything else looks fine because they're embracing in their mind or in their heart their relationship. So when one is performing any service, painting, cooking, conveying a message, or doing your occupational activities to generate economic development, to provide for your family on Krishna's behalf, that can be done with love. Okay, we're closed there. And for those of you who are dissatisfied with what you've heard in the last 45 minutes, you can please share that with me. If you have a question, a comment, a criticism, or a correction, you can directly communicate with me. My email address is MISTERDAS, that's all lowercase, Mr. Das, with no A at the end, at Gmail. And it would be good if you text me, if you're something short. The text number, again, is 336-327-1998. Thank you very much for your attention. There's nothing more valuable than the attention of your devotees and your patience. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, O glories to the assembled devotees. May everyone be blessed with deeper and deeper realizations.